Price, Beyond the Dark, on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Ladies and gentlemen, Richard Jones, paranormal expert. You can't say any more than that, really, can you, Richard? Because it just conjures up so much.
It does just about say it all, doesn't it, really?
Mm. So what is a paranormal expert?
Well, in my case, I go around the country and I visit haunted properties, collect ghostly tales off people, research the history behind them, and then publish the stories. So I suppose a paranormal expert in with regard to folklore is my expertise.
It is a phenomenon now that's exploding even more so, isn't it? It's becoming, I mean, I'm 65, so when I was younger, it was never talked about. Now it is such a big subject, isn't it?
Oh, it's a huge subject today, and it's one of those things that gets popular, or even more popular, with every year that passes. And I'm always looking back on is this wonderful quote that was that came from Dr. Margaret Murray in 1954, and she gave a presidential address to the Folklore Society, and her exact quote was, "Belief in ghosts, like belief in the devil, is dying out."
Good quote.
That said, but it reminded the Mark Twain when they reported that he'd supposedly died. The reports of my demise are.
Now,
sadly,
everybody I speak to, I always ask, have you ever seen a ghost? And everyone seems to have said no. So I'm going to ask you.
I would have to say no as well. And I would say the reason for that is that people very rarely see ghosts. People experience ghosts. So when you actually get told someone's seen a ghost and then you go to get the story, 9 times out of 10, they haven't actually seen anything. They've experienced something. They might have smelled a strange smell. They might have heard something. They might have felt something. So in that respect, I've certainly not seen a ghost, but I've experienced what I believe was a ghost up in Rake Castle in Inverness.
And tell us about it.
Well, I would love to start by saying it was a dark and stormy night.
Hang on, let me turn the lights down. Go on.
Well, it was a bright summer's morning in August.
I'll put the lights up.
And I visited this castle, and it's a ruin in the middle of a wood, and to actually even get to it, you have to cross a few acres of farmland. Mm-hmm. And I got into the castle, and I was standing in the shell, and I was standing under the stone stairs, and I heard measured footsteps plodding up the stairs. And I went round to investigate, and there was just a brick wall there. There was nothing, no way anyone could have got up there. And then suddenly the temperature dropped and I became absolutely terrified and I could not get out of that place quick enough. And to this day, I can't say what it was. I can't say for definite it was a ghostly experience, but all the way back to the car, I was looking back over my shoulder, convinced I was being followed.
Why were you terrified? What, I mean, you're a man that does this for a living, so why were you terrified?
I can honestly say it's the only time it's ever happened to me, and to this day I don't know why. It's the first time a place has actually spooked me so much. Mm. And as I say, I didn't see anything. I couldn't even tell you what it was that happened to me, but I can just say that it did happen.
I'm talking to Richard Jones, a paranormal expert, and we're going to be talking shortly about Paranormal Activity 2, which is a sequel to the 2009 hit horror film. Richard, how did you get into this?
Well, it all started for me, it was a gradual evolution. When I was a child, we had an old uncle, Irish uncle, who used to sit us around as kids and tell us ghost stories. And I suppose that got me hooked on the thrill of the ghost story. And then gradually, as I went through life, I came to London. I worked in the post office for a time, but then set up doing ghost walks in London. And that then led me into doing tours of haunted Britain. And from that, I started doing books and TV programmes. And so it was a gradual evolution. It wasn't just, I didn't wake up one day and think I'll get an ology in the paranormal.
Interesting. Now, do you go to a movie and say, that's rubbish?
I've done that with a lot of movies, I can honestly say.
But I mean movies tied up with paranormal.
I think that the ones that really, really, I would do that to are the blood and guts fest movie, the ones like that. I mean, the thing about things like Paranormal Activity 2 is what I like about that type of movie is that it engages you on a, if you like, on a subconscious level. It doesn't come out and blatantly put it in front of you. It makes the suggestion there's something there. And then gradually it works on your imagination. And although something might not be happening. You're on tenterhooks, you're on edge, you're waiting for something to happen. And so it's very powerful. I think those are the most powerful type of movies for me.
Now, I'm actually doing this interview with you, but really, I'm a bit of a charlatan because I don't go to horror movies. The only real horror movie I watched was Interview with the Vampires, which I absolutely love, but I don't see The Exodus, I don't see anything, because I have the most vivid imagination without going to see these films. And I certainly didn't go and see Paranormal Activity 2, because everyone, including my producer, said it is one of the scariest movies they've ever seen.
It certainly is, and I can honestly say, I watched it last night on DVD, and I can honestly say that last night going through this morning, for the first time in years, I actually had a nightmare.
Wow.
And quite a spooky nightmare. So.
What makes it, it took 26.3 million, what makes it such a, and that was only in 3 days, what makes it such a frightening film? I mean, you're a paranormal expert.
I think it's great. It's a great story. It's great storytelling. I mean, basically, it tells the story in a different sort of way. But the people or the characters in it, you can identify with them. Obviously, I don't want to give too much away about the storyline, but you can identify with those people. That could be your household. That could be your son or your wife, and you can really identify with them on that, and it gradually builds. And you know, the sections where nothing happens, you're just waiting for something to happen, and then there's sections where you can feel it's about to happen. So although there's nothing actually that's visible there on the screen at first, it's there in your subconscious. It's there putting you on edge. And I think it's like the M.R. James ghost stories. The M.R. James ghost stories are fantastic ghost stories because they engage you on a psychological level.
It's interesting. So you did you enjoy it, or did you look on it, because you're a paranormal expert, did you look on it in a different way than somebody would go just to be scared?
No, I went to see it, I watched it for the entertainment. For entertainment. I mean, I might sound a strange thing to say, to watch a horror movie for entertainment, but no, I watched it for its entertainment value and thoroughly enjoyed it on that basis. And I think that's the thing. I think with films, I like films that engage me, and films that are slightly different, slightly off the wall, and films, I say that, that could be me in that film.
What's interesting is that Paranormal Activity 2, on DVD, when you think of it, if you go and see it in the movie, you walk out of a movie. But if you watch it at home, you switch it off and you're still in your home where you've just watched it.
Well, I think that's why I had the nightmare.
Really?
As I say, I woke up in a cold sweat for the first time in a very long time.
You have been in Most Haunted, but I'm very curious about the unmasking of Jack the Ripper. Tell us about that.
Unmasking Jack the Ripper was a documentary that I presented and wrote in 2005, and it was basically to actually tell the story of the Whitechapel murders with expert interviews, because up to that point it hadn't actually been done. You'd had people coming forward and saying, well, this is who Jack the Ripper was, like Patricia Cornwell coming forward and saying it was Walter Sickert, and then the Royal Conspiracy. And I actually wanted to tell the story itself of those 12 weeks in 1888 where the whole world focused on a very small part of London, and a part of London that today we probably wouldn't remember anything about it had it not been for those series of murders that become known as the Jack the Ripper murders. So the whole thing wasn't to sort of solve the mystery, but it was to tell the story of the ordinary men, women and children who lived in the area and whose lives were impacted on by the Jack the Ripper murders.
Is it people like you keep the story alive? Is it, or was it as big as we are led to believe now, the story?
The Jack the Ripper story, at the time it certainly was. At the time it became an international phenomenon. I think very shortly after the murders ended, it dipped. The newspapers lost interest in it. The local people lost interest in it. And I think it really came back into prominence in about 1928-29, when a member of Parliament called Leonard Matters wrote a book called about Jack the Ripper. And that book started the interest. And of course then Hitchcock did the film The Lodger, which was based around Jack the Ripper. And then, of course, throughout the 1960s, you had all this stuff that it was a member of the royal family who did it, and that got the interest going. And I think what's happened now is it's come full swing, and it's providing now a window for people to look back on that, on the social conditions, the living conditions of Victorian London. And the interesting thing, of course, about it is that the studying of the Jack the Ripper crimes is actually on the school curriculum now as well.
Wow. I didn't know that. Why is that?
Because it was initially to look at the social conditions and to get the pupils looking into sort of what the area was like, and it was felt that this would provide a window through which people could actually look back on conditions and get to know a lot about the history. Nowadays, it's switched more to sort of critical assessment. They've got to sort of assess the murders. Why did he escape? And make them think about it. And it is. It's the classic whodunit. It's the great murder mystery. And it really does engage pupils.
And in your opinion, Richard Jones, who done it?
In my opinion, I haven't got the fuckiest idea who done it. I think that, and I don't think anyone ever will. The problem is that virtually all the evidence has disappeared, so we can't say for certain who it was. People like Dr. Robert Anderson, who was the head of the detective department at the time, he seemed to suspect, or he did suspect, that it was a man named Kosminski, and his number two, a man named Chief Inspector Swanson, names that as Aaron Kosminski. Yet then again, I do have to say that Robert Anderson, in a lot of the things that he said, was very unreliable, so I don't think for certain we'll ever know who Jack the Ripper was.
You've written several books. Is it difficult to write books about haunted Britain?
Haunted Britain can be quite difficult, for the simple reason that ghost stories tend to be very one-dimensional. And I'm always very conscious when I set out to write a book that I might end up with a long parade of blue, pink, green and grey ladies sort of hovering over the pages. So what I like to do with the stories is find the story and then find an angle on the story, and often that angle's the history as to how the haunting came about, and sometimes it's tragic and sometimes it's hilarious.
When you talk to your colleagues who are also in the paranormal circles, is there one story, or is there one ghost, or is there one building? Because we hear about so many, but is there one that every one of you go, no, I wouldn't go there. No, I don't want anything to do with this.
I don't think there's any one building in particular that people wouldn't want to go to. I think there's definitely one building that everybody I know would love to investigate, and I know a lot of TV companies would love to be able to do something in there, but it's not allowed to do it, and that's the Tower of London.
Really?
It's probably the most haunted building in the country. And when you think of the history that the Tower of London's seen, I mean, it's virtually a textbook in its own right. So there's not one part, names of the people who've passed through its gates, it reads like a who's who of history. So from that angle, and from the number of things that are meant to happen there, because, of course, there's a great theory that ghosts are nothing more than emotions that are left behind. It's called the Stone Tape Theory, and that somehow the buildings absorb the ambience and the feelings or the emotions of those who've passed through them.
Do you know, you've just made me shudder saying that. Tell me more about that. That's fascinating. That is absolutely fascinating. Emotions left in a building, because the emotions then in the Tower of London, the fear that people must have gone through. I mean, I'm a great fan of the Tudor series that are on television right now, and last week was a horrendous one where so many people have been hung, drawn and quartered. So if people have died in there and people have gone through that fear and that emotions are left in the walls, that's fascinating.
Well, it's the thing. I mean, if you go to the Tower of London, you just think how many people were locked in there who just didn't have any idea what was going to happen to them, where the future is, how many people never saw the light of day again. And we've all had that experience. I think every one of us has been to a house and we've said to ourselves, that house has got a happy atmosphere, or that house has got a sad atmosphere. And, you know, houses do have, if you like, emotions. And I think that with ghosts is that there are certain ones amongst us who can go to these places and we're slightly more attuned, and they will then pick up on something, and they're the ones who see the ghosts.
Interesting, what word has just come into my mind, which is something you couldn't do anything with, which, when you think about it, is hospices.
Well, exactly, hospices. And I mean, the big thing at the moment is a lot of the old Victorian asylums that that people are starting to investigate. And again, if you just think about the horrors and the tragedies that those places must have seen.
Interesting. You're working on a book now?
I'm having a brief period off. I'm exploring an option of doing a new Jack the Ripper book, looking at the political aspects of the Jack the Ripper case now. Because the other thing about the times that the Jack the Ripper murders were happening, there was a lot of political turmoil going on at the time as well. And I'm looking at the prospect of a book that will look at how that political turmoil impacted on the Jack the Ripper investigation.
Do you know, if I never speak to you again, I'll never forget you saying that about emotions. It really touched me that. It's such an interesting point, because I was then thinking, now, if you have a serial killer who dies, say, in prison, I wonder if his emotions will be left in that confined space.
Well, this is it. If you do, I think my own personal thing is that if you do something at a location long enough, so if you can have people who are blissfully happy. I mean, the other point I should make is emotions. It's not just sad emotions. I mean, you do have some very happy ghosts as well, and some happy haunted houses where people say, "Oh, the ghosts are really happy to be here." I mean, one of the interesting things I pick up on time and again is when people have got ghosts in their houses, and I go to interview them, and the number of times that I've said to them, "Have you ever thought of sort of having an exorcism done or getting rid of the ghost?" And often the response is, "Oh, no, they're almost part of the family. I would never want to do that."
Richard, are there many phonies in the paranormal world?
Phonies. I don't know about phonies. I mean, it is a world where I suppose it is easy to sort of come up with a ghost. I mean, somebody once said to me that if a pub ever suddenly turns out to be really haunted, the first thing you should look at is the balance sheet to see if it needs a lift for customers. So I think the paranormal world can be used to attract customers, can be used, for more materialistic things. But I think there's a lot, and the majority of people in the paranormal world, there's a lot of very genuine people who are fascinated by it. It's interesting. I'll give you an example of how it can do good. I was speaking to a mother, and one of the most haunted ones we did, in fact, my first one was on Dick Turpin. And I was talking to a mother who's actually, a few weeks later, she said, "I've really got to say thank you to you and the Most Haunted team, because my son and his friends saw that Dick Turpin one, and they have now spent the last Saturdays going to the library, and they've done their own project on Dick Turpin and put together a historical project." And I thought, well, that's inspired them to do that. And it's because the paranormal aspect of it brought them into it. But then they actually made their own discovery about the history. And I think anything that gets kids learning history and studying can't be a bad thing.
Richard Jones, you're a fascinating man. How can people find your books?
They're available in all good bookshops, and one or two bad ones in Soho as well.
And to and to finish off, what about this movie? Do people really want to buy it and watch it and be scared at home?
Well, it's out on Monday, and I would say, as I say, having watched it last night, it really is. It's creepy. It's got its jump out of your chair moments, its edge of the seat moments, and it's got that element that just keeps you hanging on, thinking it's going to happen, it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
Richard Jones, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Late Night City with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.